was like, oh, well, it's just, you know, a regular delay, some electricity thing, some mechanical whatever. No, it was a bull on the New Jersey train. So I actually had one associate that he was like, I'm just not going to come in because I've been waiting here for 3 hours and we're not moving. So I was like,
three hours. Wow.
Fair. Because he's coming from, I don't remember where, but somewhere where it's not easy to get the train. There's only one option. So he was like, I'm not driving to the next train and I'm not waiting for the bus. So,
wow.
See you tomorrow.
Not going to make it. Sorry. Not happening.
Yeah. So at least I'm not coming from that side, because everyone who, all of my associates that come in from Jersey, like, it's weird. Whenever the New Jersey trains are not running well, the New York trains are totally fine. I even get to work early and it's not super crowded. But when one has an issue, the other one is fine. So it's funny because I was like, I can always tell when someone's not being honest about why they're running late and they just blame it on the trains. Because I'm like, well, all these six people are coming from Queens. So if one of them is running late, then pretty sure all of them are running late. You know, this big group is coming from Brooklyn. So if one of them's running late, they're probably all going to be running late. Same thing for Jersey and the Bronx or wherever. So I could always tell when someone's like, they're like, oh, I'm running late because of the trains. And I'm like, everyone else coming from your area is on time. So, okay. But yeah, bull on the train. You don't see that every day. And I definitely didn't think I was going to see that here, but oh, well. Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's some crazy shit.
I know. God, like, wow.
How was your birthday?
Oh, it was good. Oh my God. I didn't want to tell everyone at work. So I just told my front desk people. Cause you guys know. So anyways, so they didn't know until that day, but one of my front desk people, he got me a birthday cake, just like a little birthday cake and just a slice. Then everyone was like, oh, what? Why didn't you tell us it was your birthday? They were like so offended. I didn't share with them. And I was like, guys, I promise it's not a big deal. It's okay. Like, thank you. But, you know, you don't have to do anything. I was trying to leave early that day. I was trying to take a half day. No, I couldn't because somebody decided to go to the bakery and buy two cakes because there's more than 30 of us. And then they went to get flowers and whatever. And so it was like a whole thing. I was like, it was really, really sweet because, you know, I don't always know how they react to certain things. One of my bosses, after I told her, oh, yeah, they did something really sweet. They got whatever for my birthday. They're like, you know, they're a really hard group to win over. So if they went through that much trouble, they must like you. I was like, you know, you're right. So it was really sweet. It was good. And then me, Mom, and Benjamin went to, oh, my God, Crystal, we went to that Indian restaurant with the cheese naan. Oh, my God. It was so good. It was so good. So that, and then we went to Paris Baguette and got some pastries and some coffee. So that was nice. It was good. And then there was more partying because yesterday was our Christmas party. So there was more partying from my people at work. So no, it's been good. It's been busy because I had to get everything out before everyone went to St. Bart's or to their house in Florida or to wherever they're going for the holidays. So it was busy, but, you know, that's just what it is.
That's better than me. My work didn't remember my birthday at all, so.
Oh, no. Oh. Hopefully.
And I've been there a year, so it's not like I just started.
Oh, shit.
Do they usually do things for birthdays? I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a lot of people in my my department in Texas, but I mean, not even a happy birthday. So not even a well wishes. So I mean, wow. I wasn't expecting like my cubicle to be decorated or nothing crazy like that because I don't really have like people I know that much or that well there. So I wasn't expecting that, but like at least a hey, oh, it's your birthday, happy birthday, or happy birthday, nothing, not a thing. So, anyways.
Well, we're going to call you on your birthday and tell you happy birthday. I'm going to wake you up early.
And tomorrow we're going to have some chicken.
Chicken.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, I miss Crystal's visceral reaction to some real good chicken.
Oh my God. I said that one time and it's never, I'm never going to live it down.
Never.
I mean, maybe forever. Maybe if we didn't love chicken so much, it wouldn't be a problem. But we talk about chicken all the time.
And we go to that restaurant for all kinds of special occasions. So
they're literally, oh, it's a weekend? Let's go. Oh,
we need to celebrate something? Let's go there.
Let's go. Yeah, it's just the default because everyone likes it. It's good.
So you guys going tomorrow? My family hasn't been before, so they're all going to go.
Really? Oh, cool. Oh, my God.
Because I realized when I went for my birthday that one year, it was like us and I think Angelica was there.
It was Alexa and
Melina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Oh, that cake was really good, too. Mm-hmm. That's good.
My sister and brother are going to make my cake this year, and they're, like, very nervous.
Again? Oh, my God. Didn't they do it last year for the first time? Yeah.
They're going to make a London Fog cake, so.
Oh, they're
getting, sure it'll taste fine.
They're very high expectations this year.
I mean, they made me that s'mores cake one time, and yeah. Ariana was like, I hate meringue forever, which, fair. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this one isn't as difficult as meringue, so I think you should be okay, because it's just a chocolate cake with a tea-flavored-esque frosting, so you should be fine.
Okay, that's easier.
But
let me see that pen you're using.
Is that a I thought it was a wand. I was like, she all of a sudden carries a wand
with her. It's got a pearl at the end of it.
That's, ooh, so fancy. Is it like Queen Elizabeth's saber situation thing? That's what it looks like.
I don't know. I got it at the Dollar Tree.
Queen Elizabeth approves.
I was in line. I was like, that's cute. Yoink.
$1.25 now.
Oh, that's right. Ugh,
rude. That's
so rude.
That's so dumb. Rude.
No, it's not rude. How's that for a transition?
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
We're getting there. We're
workshopping it. Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to our silly banter. We have thoughts, and we are finishing up. Forgive me. I have a cough and can't breathe well. So bear with me. Where We Have Thoughts, a podcast about movies. I'm Anna.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Joy.
And today we are finishing our Oscar Rewind series, where we're looking back at Oscar history and talking about the Best Picture nominees of 2011. We're talking about the King's Speech today. It is the story of King George the Sixth, his unexpected ascension to the throne of the British Empire in 1936, and the speech therapist who helped the unsure monarch overcome his stammer. It was nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture. It was nominated for performance by an actor in a leading role, Colin Firth, performance by an actor in a supporting role, Jeffrey Rush, performance by an actress in a supporting role, Helena Bonham Carter, achievement in directing, Tom Hooper, original screenplay, Tom Seidler. Art direction, Eve Stewart. Production design and Judy Farr for set decoration. Achievement in cinematography, Danny Cohen. Achievement in costume design, Jenny Beaven. Achievement in film editing, Tariq Anwar. Original score, Alexandra Desplat. An achievement in sound mixing, Paul Hamblin, Martin Jensen, and John Midgley. It won Best Picture, Lead Actor, Directing, and Original Screenplay. This is The King's Speech. Thank you. All right, y'all, we did it. Another year in the books. Woo. The King's Speech. Have we seen it?
Yes.
Yes.
No, this was my first time.
Okay.
Oh, okay. No. Oh, I thought you meant, like, did we watch it for this episode? I was like, duh. But okay. No, I had not
seen it. Don't act like you're new here.
I had seen it before, and I remember enjoying it a lot the first time, and it pretty much the same feelings. I think I was able to appreciate the set more this time and the music more this time, but overall, a pleasant film. Nothing too extravagant. I kind of want to compare it to Philomena a little bit in the sense that, like, it was a nice movie. It was just nice. Plus, I love Colin Firth. He's so precious. Love him.
Adorable.
Love him. He's so good. Yeah, this was my first time watching it, and I enjoyed it. I had a good time. You know, it was a good classic underdog story of no one expects him to succeed, and then he does. But this did feel like the safest choice for Best Picture this year. There was a lot of great experimental, like, first-time nomination kind of feels here. And this felt like, oh, we're not ready to award a movie like Black Swan yet or The Social Network. So we're going to go with the safe option of The King's Speech because it's tried and true. We know this kind of formula. It's good.
Yeah, Oscar's going to Oscar, you know.
They were so close. They had so many fantastic options. There's like four pretty much perfect films in this category that could have won easily. And yet here we are. And I know that a lot of people have like a lot of like journalists and like what do they call them? People who review stuff.
Film critics.
Film critics, thank you. I didn't really remember the term. I have talked about it like post this year, post that 2011, how it was not the right choice. But I feel like as we go backwards, since we're going backwards instead of forwards, we're just going to see more of this really great films getting snubbed for really safe films. That are not bad. They're just safe.
Yeah, I feel like this was maybe not the first modern, like, outcry of, like, how could this win over this one? But it feels very poignant in time. It's like Social Network was such a defining movie, and it was hitting all the spots. Even Toy Story 3 was hitting all the right spots. And then there comes Oscars with The King's Speech. I think had The King's Speech been not that great of a movie, I would have been pissed, too. But it's a good movie. It's the Best Picture worthy nomination, sure. Win, no. But I feel like if it Social Network or like Vice, then I would have like, I don't know, burned a city down or something. But because King's Speech is nice and it's pleasant, it's not the worst thing in the world. I don't know. I get why people are mad, but it could have been way worse, is what I mean.
It had a tight script. It was a good script. It had excellent acting from Jeffrey Rush, Colin Firth, and Helena Bonham Carter. They all were fantastic. It had, and Tom Hooper's not my favorite director, and I'm a little upset that he won here. But it had good set, good costuming. It's history, but it's not so far back that we don't understand. Like, it's easy to kind of get into. So
easily accessible.
Easily accessible, thank you. So it's a good movie. It's just maybe not a great movie.
And also the story of you know, this king in particular and how he rose to power and the whole situation behind it with abdication and his brother and how he's Elizabeth's father. Like, I'm really into the royal family. Not so much as like people, but just as like an institution. I just find it very interesting. And I'm an avid watcher of The Crown as well, so and I've seen a bunch of documentaries and all these other things, so I it's it to me was interesting on that level, because especially in The Crown, they don't really talk about his daughter too much. It's like a little bit, a couple of things that he says, but they don't really focus on that. But I think casting Colin Firth, who's already so like sweet and kind and like just adorable in general, to have him play this person, you like automatically would root for him right off the bat. Yeah, it's just it's good. It's good.
I think like you said, the biggest category where I absolutely don't approve of this win is like directing. Like, how could you look at what, you know, Darren Aronofsky or David Fincher or even the Coens did and like be like, oh yeah, this is better. I just don't find them comparable. I think that there's a lot of things that The King's Speech excelled in. But I think this is just like, I mean, the obvious, there's three other very obvious choices there. And I just can't find any way to really justify that win.
Yeah, that's fair. It's funny because Tom Hooper's things that he does in this movie didn't bother me as much as they did in Les Mis. Les Mis, they got on my nerves. The whole super close up, the subject in the corner of the frame rather than the center. Like, I don't know, maybe it just felt, it fit this aesthetic better to me.
Mm-hmm.
Les Mis, it didn't work. But I can see why he got that gig, because I see this and I think, oh, okay. You know, this, he's a good fit for it. To me, it didn't feel pretentious or too much in The King's Speech. I guess maybe just a little too much in Les Mis, but.
No, I agree, but there were, and I'm mad I didn't write them down, but I remember a few times feeling like, this shot is really weird, or I don't understand why we're looking at it from this perspective. But if we're talking about what we liked, and we've all mentioned this, the set, the art direction.
Oh my gosh,
yes. I'm obsessed with Lionel's office, like that back wall that looks like it's got like four different layers of wallpaper and decay. Yeah.
Even his walk-in area is like foyer. Yes. The darkness on that is gorgeous. And even
with all of the light.
It's lit really well. And then also in when Lionel goes to audition for that, I think it's a play or something, and that theater is beautiful. The way it's designed and then the way that the actors are placed to just fit into the pattern of the wall, just so. The lighting, the chandeliers, oh my God, gorgeous.
Really, the art direction was really fantastic.
Agreed.
I can't wait to look back at who actually won that. I don't have it on hand. When we go through categories, I just didn't want to rustle through it.
Right, true.
Alice in Wonderland.
We'll get to when we go to categories. Okay.
But I couldn't help but wondering, like, how different the royal family and the whole institution would be if they were just A, allowed to feel, or B, allowed to go to therapy. I feel like things would be so different today had, seeking a therapist out worked commonplace and acceptable for them.
Right.
Because this poor man just needed someone to talk to.
Yeah, and he's so sad. Like, the entire that scene he has with Jeffrey Rush, and he's talking about when he was a kid and the nanny didn't like him and all this stuff. And like, it's breaking my heart. Like, it was just, he just kind of says it like, yeah, she didn't like me. And I was kind of whatever. And just like, I was like, oh man, he is so sad.
I know. And he's
give him a lying. Hug.
Yeah, he's not really. I think Jeffrey Rush realizes it, even though Jeffrey Rush is not a doctor or a therapist or anything. He's like, you've suffered a lot of abuse. It makes sense that it resulted in like a speech impediment or in other ailments, because, you know, whatever, it's like a well backed up theory that like whatever mental or psychological illness that you have ends up manifesting itself physically if you don't get any treatment for it. So especially living in a family, in an institution with so many hard, rigid rules, and you don't fit in, well, they're going to break it out of you, because that's the only way they know how.
Yeah.
Yeah. The royal family, they're not allowed to have any flaws, which I find ridiculous. Impossible. Because they are such flawed people.
They're the most flawed people, I would argue.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, I mean, they're held to this, I guess in their head, they think we are just, they don't say this out loud, but they think they're, I don't know, I'm not them. they're the superior, they're the ones that people should look up to. So in their heads, they have to be this, do that, the other, whatever. But yeah, the royal family, that stuff is, like I said, interesting to me, but ultimately, I think if I lived there, I would hate it. It's only because I don't live there that I'm like, oh, what is this interesting?
Yeah, it's more like to look at them as like they're almost kind of like not people, just almost kind of like unreal. Like it's like a character situation versus like there's people there, but you know they're treated as like an entity, not
it's
like
as people. Yeah, like they that's not the crown, but in the crown they say a bunch like we're normal people. We're just normal. I get up and I go to bed like everyone else, and everyone's like, "No, Liz, you're not normal. This is not normal."
No. You can't even relate to your prime ministers. You're not normal.
Yeah, or even your kids.
But that that might actually be the most normal thing about them.
Actually, another normal thing is because I'm almost done with the last season, and I'm noticing how Liz is getting really close to Will, and I was like, oh, it makes sense because grandparents tend to get closer to their grandkids and kind of like skip the kids. Yeah. And there's Charles like, love me, mommy, love me. And she's like, I'm talking to Will, bye. Like, that's just, it feels very real in that normal.
I also, no.
Are you okay?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I have cold brain fog, so.
It's okay.
I forgot what I was going to say, so I'll just go something. On to...
Okay, please.
No, okay, no, yeah. No. So, take it away.
After he meets with Lionel the first time and he has him record that thing, and he's like, this doesn't work. And he gets mad and he goes home. The scene where he's like blasting the music, smoking a cig, towel over your forehead. I was like, that is a mood.
That is a mood. Oh, mood. My God. The next best thing would be if he was like soaking in a bathtub. That would be
that was later probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel this, buddy. I feel ya. Oh man.
I just think of it like I just finished watching the final season of The Crown, right? Which Crystal, you need to call me after you're done, please.
Okay. All right, I will.
We need to chat. It's just so, first of all, it's an impossible achievement. You're never gonna be good enough for them, period. First of all, the institution has too many rules, I don't think, obviously they don't, because this institution has been around for hundreds of years. They don't understand that like humans like age, and humans are meant to change and evolve. And like whatever worked in 1490 is not going to work in 1990, is not going to work in 1940, whatever. Like things have to change in order to, you know, be sustainable, in order to sustain life, in order to not, you know, keep the people of this institution miserable. So like, okay, no one could have heard of like marrying a divorcee, but then like what, like 50, 60 years later it happened anyways. So eventually you got to find some sort of compromise. Maybe don't like change the whole thing again over in one day, but like there's got to be some sort of like, there has to be room for like being able to budge and being able to compromise, even though like that's not what the institution is about, but it's just not sustainable.
Or like learn from your mistakes. Like, okay, clearly we messed up when David couldn't marry, I'm blanking on her name.
Simpson.
Wallace, yeah. When he couldn't marry Wallace. Uh-huh. Okay, whoops, our bad. He's like, peace, I'm out. So then when it happens again, be like, let's consider this. Because they would have saved themselves and people would have survived had this not happened.
Yeah.
Like there's a, since you've seen it, Joy, there's, I just finished the Will's Mania episode, and the scene where Will is like giving it to Charles. I was like, oh yeah, you're wrong for this. You've been cheating on mom since the get-go. She went into the other guy's arms because of you. You did this, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, Charles is thinking, well, I just wanted to marry Camilla. Like, it's, and then I couldn't do it because it's a cycle. Like, change is hard. I get that. But, like, you have to learn from your mistakes at least. because then you're going to make the same mistakes over and over again. That's just like a life lesson.
Right.
Anyways.
But they never learn. And even until now, they still haven't learned. Because what happened?
And then they're like, what's the problem?
Harry left.
How can I fix this? What can I do?
It's like that meme. Am I the problem? Yes, you are the problem. Literally, everyone is telling you, you're the problem. Everybody. I found it really interesting how even like some hardcore royalists, once Elizabeth was passed, they were like, we don't super love Charles. Should we just end it here? Like,
yeah. Who loves Charles?
Nobody. And you know what? Speaking of Charles,
Camilla's the only one who loves Charles.
The stupid bitch. She doesn't count. Charles doesn't count anyways either. I was literally looking, there was on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, it was showing the like side-by-side comparisons of like the real life, whatever happened, and then on the show. And I was like, the Crown must have paid good money to Netflix to hire, what's his name, a much more physically appealing Dominic West, who has been up until this point, like a generally handsome actor man, to play Charles of all people. Yeah. They really just were like, okay, these last two seasons are gonna get rough, let's just pay Netflix off, right, soften the blow and just make him seem a little bit more sympathetic, because everything that they did for Charles in the last two seasons, other than, you know, William finally getting to give it to his father, was like, oh, he's so charitable, he's so modern, ooh, you know, maybe she should abdicate and give it over to Charles or whatever. I was like, bitch,
he's
no.
He's a new king. He's going to bring us into a new era.
He's blah, so blah, modern, blah. Bitch.
When they cast Dominic West, I was like, oh, they're clearly Team Charles. Because
yeah.
Every other casting seems realistic except for Dominic West.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
Even like Harry and William, their casting was like, okay, so they're like slightly better looking than what they look like back then, but it's still like they still resemble each other. They're not super far off. Like,
right. Yeah.
Idiots.
Anyways, back to the movie we were talking about. Not the Crown.
You can sit here about the Crown forever.
The part that I laughed was whenever he's like, oh, when you curse, you like you speak clearly, more clearly. And he's like, he tells him to say something, and he's like, oh, bugger off, well, bloody bugger to you, you beastly bastard. And I thought that was so funny.
My favorite one, I also wrote down one, was Willy, shit, and fuck, and tits.
He's probably that never been scene. Able to say that out loud. So, no. Like, he was just kind of like,
I just love and tits.
Yeah. Also, Colin Farrell, like Farrell. Colin Farrell. I like Colin Farrell too.
I love Colin Farrell. Yeah.
That whole just like, he's so good.
It was
his lower lip was working overtime this film. You could see it working. Yeah, for sure.
let's give him the nomination for just the lower lip. Colin Firth, lower lip. Lead
better
acting.
Than Christian Bale for The Fighter. Is that this year or last year? Bloop, bloop.
This year, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Fighters this year.
Look, we've had such great movies come after The Fighter that we just kind of forgot about The Fighter at all. So.
Girl.
There's been a lot.
My brain is on vacation. It said goodbye.
Oh, how nice for your brain.
Same.
I'm not a functioning human.
You know, the very end when he's giving his said speech, and it's like they have him in that room. And I was like, oh my God, I want a podcast room just like that.
Yes, like a beautiful, like dark mahogany wood, yes. And one beautiful big window, and like perfect mic setup, where we're literally like this far away from each other.
I want that. I want that for my birthday.
Oh, all right. Let me get to building. I've never built anything in my life, but I guess
you
I can try.
Your Oh, wait, what have you built? I guess nothing. I remember when Anna would build things in the house, they would be just slightly a little wonky. Like she would screw in the screws, so they're just a little bit loose. So if you shook it hard enough, you could like shake them.
It had character.
It's my signature.
I almost thought, like, did you do this on purpose?
It's how you know I've been there.
That's why you need to
try.
I know you did. I know you did.
Oh, man.
And then you were like, I got it when I wanted to help you.
Well, we all have our flaws, you know?
How very cancer son of you.
I did replace my own tail lights.
Okay.
The other what? A few months
look at
ago.
You, AutoZone. Yeah.
And they're working.
I went to AutoZone, didn't ask for help. Well, because everyone was busy. So I just walked down the aisle. I had the one in my hand and I looked and I grabbed it. And then I asked, I was like, is this the same? Is this what I need? And they were like, that's it. Mm-hmm. And it was like $12.
Why do I feel like Anna was like, is this it? Okay, good. And then she just ran away. Like throwing money on the counter as she went.
Not true.
If we had a sitcom, that's exactly what would have happened.
No. Yes, miss.
I just figured out. I've been smelling something off and I couldn't figure out what it is. And I just realized it's the flowers in the corner of the room that are beyond dead.
Oops. Yikes.
It has to be that. Because I can barely smell anything. And if I'm smelling that.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Moving on. Guy Pierce. I love Guy Pierce.
Oh, that was him. Okay. He's great. I was wondering. I was like, which guy is this? There's a guy, not Guy Fieri, the other one,
Guy Fieri, yes.
Guy,
Jasmine
who's
God,
the
yes.
Guy that does the directing. Is that him too?
Tom Hooper is the director.
Guy Ritchie,
that one. I was like, there's another guy, but I was like, that can't be him. So, okay, Guy, I was about to say Fieri again.
So Guy Pierce. The funny thing about Guy Pierce is when him and Kate Winslet were shooting Mildred Pierce, they were shooting that down the street from where I worked when I lived in New York. And so I saw them like walk from, I think it must have been like a makeup trailer or something or whatever trailer to the house they were shooting in. And I was like, I'll just look at it. And I meant to watch Mildred Pierce, but I never did. I forgot.
I did. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
I saw them.
She did it for you. So you're good.
Okay.
Guy Pierce. I always giggle a little when I think of Guy Pierce because, and I'm sure I've told this story on this podcast before, but one year for Father's Day, my brother and I were like, let's go see a movie, Dad. And so he's like, good. He picked out the movie. We went and watched it. It was a movie called Rover with Guy Pierce and Robert Pattinson. Had no idea what this movie was about. And throughout the movie, you don't really get what this movie is about. It's post-apocalyptic. They're in Australia. Guy Pierce is, like, out for revenge for some reason. He meets up with Robert Pattinson, who's a little simple-minded. He played that character so well. And then you get to the end of the film, we were just like, what the fuck did we just watch? All of that for that? We were mind blown. Like, we walked out of there going, what? Like, that, okay. It's a movie I've been meaning to go back and rewatch now with film brain. But every time I think of Guy Pierce, I think of that Father's Day.
I'm going to Google that now. I need to know what that's about. Because I'm definitely not going to watch it, but it sounds interesting.
It was a pretty good movie, all in all. We walked out going, yeah, the acting was great. The story was weird, but anyway, Rover, go check it out.
So the first question on Google about this movie is, what was the point of the movie?
And I haven't seen it, but I think if you're I think John Wick might have like similar vibes to like the purpose of it all. Okay. Anyway,
I've actually never seen any of the John Wick movies. And those are like, I feel like I would like them.
I feel like you would like them. I also haven't seen them, but my brothers went to go see it without me. And then I never kept up with the movies and they kept seeing them without me. So I never saw them. Rude.
And you never could see them ever. Because they betrayed you.
No, I can't. But I just know that they're really good and they're action things. So like, I know I would super enjoy it.
That's my bread and butter.
And I see a lot of talk about the cinematography of that all the time. So I'll see it. I'll see it one of these days.
So in one of the scenes, I believe it's the same scene where he talks about when Colin Firth talks about the nanny and how she didn't like him. He talks about how he used to be left-handed. And I think it's wild to me that they used to correct that, that that was a problem. Like, my grandma is left-handed, and my mom, she said they corrected her. So she writes with her right hand, but she could do some things with her left. And that's wild to me that they would correct them. Correct them, I should say. Like, that's crazy.
I mean, like, even in more recent times, like, it wasn't like he would get reprimanded for it, but Tony's left-handed, and, like, because, you know, the public education system doesn't accommodate for that, there's a lot of things he had to learn to do with his right hand. So now he can kind of do them for both. Yeah, but they don't have, like, you know, how impossible is it to get for teachers to get regular school supplies, much less left-handed school supplies?
That's a whole other issue we're not going to talk about right now, because we could be
right. Right. And then, like, I remember he would complain about, like, his whenever he was writing in his notebook, he's left-handed, so it would get all smudged if he's writing in pencil. Like, oh, even, wow, like, things like that. That wasn't even that long ago.
And I think in where Meemaw, like, my grandma, she's left-handed, but she left school very early, so she didn't really, wasn't around the environment where they corrected her, you know, where they felt so, because she got pregnant really young and didn't really go to college. So my mom did. My mom went to school, and they were like, nope, that's wrong. Which is nuts to me. Like, I mean, I believe it, crazy, but still, like, that's crazy.
They used to think it was, like, a sign of the devil that you were evil, that you were a witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you weren't like everyone else. If you were different in any way slightly. I mean, even farther back when it was, like, Salem witch trials, they were slightly different, just a little bit. Oh, she's a witch. Let's burn her. If she's a real witch, she'll go to whatever, and if she burns, as she wasn't, like, it's you're not like everyone else, you're a problem, basically.
Collective humanity is just stupid, like,
that's exactly what I was gonna say. Humanity is stupid.
Yeah,
like, when people gather in a group, it's why do we default so easily to, like,
how did we get on each other
to pick on each other?
Yeah, I think it, like, most of it stems from the fact that you're afraid of what you don't know. That's your first reaction. So it's different. I'm therefore scared of it. They go and they let the fear take over because they don't take time to educate themselves on what it is, what it could be, how it could help them if needed. It's fear. Fear takes over. That's what it is.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the other things I think about too is, like, what do you call it? It's kind of like one of those things where, like, okay, I'm going to bully someone so that I don't get bullied. Yeah. Like, I'm going to pick on somebody else so that I'm safe. But then not realizing that, like, you know, it could happen to you too. So you're not getting very far that way.
It's like, it's, I think we can understand, like, how does that not make sense to you? But in their brain, like, similar to when, not that I'm justifying men beating women, but it happens when men will beat their wives because that's what they saw their dad do, you know? So it's like all they know in a way. So they've taught that's how you're supposed to treat women. But anyways, this is way off topic. I'm so sorry.
That's what we're here for. We're here to review films.
We're talking about The King's Speech.
Interject whatever other random thoughts we have about it. If you're not here for our random thoughts, why are you here?
I mean, is anybody here?
I think at this point we have, one listener left? Is anyone listening, really? No. I want to kind of say some crazy stuff and then see if anyone
listens. Like, what kind of crazy stuff?
I don't know. Just, I mean, in general, I'm already too weird on here, so it's enough.
You already expressed a pretty crazy thought at the end of last week's episode, so I think
we're covered. and the award for best editing goes to Anastasia, because that was beautiful. That really was. I was like, okay, this bitch is, like, she knows about editing now. Like, who is she?
I mean, like, 6 years in and we finally did it, but we did it.
Hey, you know? We have an intro. Yeah. We have an outro.
It helped getting Audacity back. Working with GarageBand was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I hated it. So now that Audacity works for Max again, I was like, thank God.
You're so smart, Anna.
Audacity is so smart.
Audacity is so smart. Okay, so like the script is nice and whatever, right? And like it was fine, but I feel like all my reservations about this movie is just that it's good, it's fine, it is what it is. I feel like there's
it's a pleasant mid.
Right. Like if we, it's not like boring mid, like all the stuff we had last season. Right. But since we're at the end of the season, I just can't help but compare it to everything else. And everything else, I feel like whether good or bad, we had much more strong reactions towards it. Mm-hmm. And this is just so like average, fine, ice cream. Why am I so hungry? Like it's just not.
French fries. Ice cream.
What was it even advertising? Do you remember?
Probably some weight loss shit.
What? Yeah. I don't remember. But I know we had it.
Watching that commercial late at night and just dying.
I don't even remember what we were watching at the time other than that commercial. I know we had it like saved on the DVR. And we would play it back, but I don't remember what it was. It was some episode of something.
No, I feel like it might have been the Olympics.
I don't remember.
I feel like it was the Winter Olympics, and we were watching like ice skating and shit.
I don't know.
I don't know why that is stuck in my head, but I feel like it's the Winter Olympics.
Maybe because in the commercial they were like moving like ice dancers.
Ice cream.
They were moving like ice dancers. Yeah. It was like ice dancing on ground. Yeah.
They were dressed in purple or something. And they were like,
yeah,
they
would like it was very
in a circle
like,
and then they'd come up and they'd say there.
Wow. Yeah, very like contemporary.
Movements. Interpretive dance, if you will.
Interpretive dance, yes. Speaking of which, I saw that I think Tubi now has all the seasons of So You Think You Can Dance.
All of them? Because before they said the current season.
Yes, they have all of them. The only thing is you have to buy them.
How much? Because I will do it.
I love that show I didn't so check much.
The whole thing about Tubi was that it was free.
No, so I think it's either Tubi or Freevee. I think it's Freevee.
Is it Freevee also free?
Well, those are not free. I think the last two seasons are free, but I looked and it does have season one through.
Are you serious?
Yes, I looked. I checked for you and I was going to tell you and I forgot to text you. Because it popped up on my
suggested. We got to finish this recording so I can watch it.
It popped up on my suggested to watch. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I saw it said season one through 30, whatever. And I was like, no way.
But you know, I've never actually seen season one. I didn't jump onto season two.
I think it would be worth the splurge to watch
because
season one
has Artem on it.
I'm going to buy it. We're going to share an account. We're all going to watch season one together.
And even though Travis Wall's in season two and whatever. Still a beautiful season. So much beautiful dancing on that season. So
I've been getting a lot since I got my TV. Now I use YouTube a lot because I have to play music to go to sleep. I've been getting a lot of like dance suggestions and I'm like, okay, great. And I've been watching a lot of the old So You Think You Can Dance things. It's great. And then I found out, Crystal, I don't know if I told you this, but my other friend Crystal from San Antonio.
Her name Crystal. You need to give her a nickname. I don't like this.
First of all, she does have a nickname anyways, Duchess, so you're fine. First of all, I've never met a bad Crystal. It's only because their nieces and nephews couldn't say Crystal because their mom's name was Crystal, so now she's Duchess. It is the kids thing. Anyways, this Crystal is also, I think you're the same age, and she also was obsessed with So You Think You Can Dance. And I'm like, I need you two to meet so that we can sit down and watch dance stuff. Because
that's so weird.
I know, I was like, do I just gravitate towards people that are already like the people that I know because it's comforting to me? Because that's great.
That's generally, yes, that's everybody, I think.
But I was like, I had no idea that she loves So You Think You Can Dance until like months into us hanging out. I was like, wait. What? She was like, yeah, I watched them from the very beginning. I was like, oh my God, you need to meet my friend Crystal.
Oh, my Lanta.
I know.
What? And then it's coming back. I had no idea it was even going to come back. I thought, like,
yeah, when is it coming back? Because I thought like it was February. Only, it was like a summer thing, but
it's February? Typically a summer show. They did one, like, one time they did a fall season, and it was interesting. But yeah, I thought for sure the show was gone. But surprise, surprise, come back. And maybe they were trying to, because Twitch's passing was really hard for everyone. And I feel like they were trying to, like, let's just put a pin in it and let's just grieve and then we'll figure it out. So I feel like that's what was happening. Because it was a year, like, I think the 12th or something of December. And obviously he was one of the judges, so they had to figure that out. But it's Nigel coming back, which, even though he gets on my nerves, I do like him there just for, like, I don't know. Once in a while, he says something good. Balance, yeah. And then it's, they got rid of JoJo, thank God. And then they have Allison, who is Twitch's wife, who was on the show. Ooh, I'm going to cry. So that's going to be great, along with Max.
Cat Lily coming back?
Cat always. And then Max, Val's brother, is going to be on the, which I'm so Max. Happy for, because they need a strong ballroom person to be on the panel.
Yes, yes. So the ballroom people can get.
Yes.
Some real criticism.
So I feel that's going to be good. Because JoJo Siwa was fine. But JoJo Siwa, I realized I didn't like, because she, like, screams when she talks. And I hate that.
So you don't like me?
Her energy is a lot.
And I'm like, every now and then she would, because she's an actual dancer, she would give critiques that were, like, actual, like, you know, things that would help them. But mostly it was just going, her saying, just like, I don't know. She was just too much. She was too much. And, like, Leah Remedy is fine, but, like, why is she there? There's no
why. When was she on there? Last season?
It was Leah because she replaced Matthew Morrison. It's going to be Matthew Morrison, Twitch, and JoJo Siwa, and then they booted him out of there before final shows and brought in Leah Remedy. So they're kind of, like, scrambling, I guess. But,
oh, my God.
I mean, she's fine, but she's, like, she was like the Paula Abdul of it. Like, you were so great. You made me feel things. I love you. La la. She was very whatever. So anyways, love that show. I'm very excited to come back. It's my favorite show of all time. Yeah. Anyways, back to the King's Speech. I feel like we're excluding a lot on I'm so sorry. I'm not doing it on purpose. I promise.
It's okay. Like I said, my brain is half here. So.
And it gives you little pauses to be able to blow your nose too, so that's good.
I'm blowing my nose. I'm hacking my. I'm coughing.
You're hacking. Hacking is what it is.
She can't even say what she's doing.
My lungs. I'm hacking my lungs out.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. I have the movie playing right now, and I forgot Helena Bonham Carter. Right. It's so funny that she plays the wife here, and she plays
Margaret,
his daughter, in the show. Margaret.
I thought about that. I wonder if that, like, informed any of her.
Yeah, because she also had
her character.
She already had, like, royal, like, behavior or acting experience or whatever.
And then also,
not just that, but, like, just, like, having, I've played her mother, so.
Uh-huh.
Like, how that informs playing the daughter.
Yeah, another layer to it. Adds another layer.
Yeah.
Also, the guy who played the Archbishop, ooh, that was hard to say, played the older version of David, his brother, who abdicated in the
crowd. Yeah. Oh, my God. I feel like in England, they just swip-swap, like, different people for the
Also, I feel like there's only, like, 4 actors, maybe 10 actors in, also in Canada, because I watched a lot of Canadian shows back in the day, and there's only, honestly, like, 13 actors in Canada, especially kid actors. So I've seen, because I was big, a watcher of Degrassi. And so I see a lot of those Degrassi kids pop up in other things. And I'm like, oh, he's Canadian. This is shot in Canada. I knew it. Because I just, I know Canada. Anyways. I wrote. Go ahead.
Nope.
I said the blue room where Lionel's waiting for Birdie. When he's like, he wants to go meet him, and Bernie's like, I want to see him. He's like in a really beautiful blue room with, like, blue and white walls. Mm-hmm. Another set design that was gorgeous. I wrote, he's rolling on the floor, LOL.
I wonder how much of that set was like constructed and how much of that was, you know, in not in-house, but mm-hmm. like a real set, like a real home or venue or place or whatever. I want to go to England to go see these rooms and see these giant houses.
Yeah. Agreed. I still want to go to Highclere Castle.
Yes. I want us to do a castle tour through England and Scotland, please.
Sign me up, please. We'll go.
I want to go so bad. So bad.
Do we have any last notes?
That's what I was going to say. Any last notes before we do categories?
Oh, I wrote, how would this help? So in the beginning, the doctor's trying to cure his stammer, and he puts, like, marbles in his mouth. How would that help?
Yeah, because, like, everything that, like, Jeffrey Rush did was the opposite, was trying to relax him, not stress him out more.
Like, I don't, how, doesn't even make any sense. Like, I mean, whatever. I know it was, like,
and then, like, and then, like, also, like, berating him while he's trying, like, that's not helping.
That seems pretty par for the course, honestly.
Right. Like, there's encouragement, and then there's berating someone. And, like, one of those things is not going to get you anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I wrote, the shot in the very beginning when he's in the stadium, and he's at the podium, and there's that shot of everyone starting to, looking at him, and he's standing there. Beautiful shot. Gorgeous. Let's see.
Oh, I said I hate seeing Weinstein's name every time.
Oh,
you know, we're watching movies to see his name. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Which I probably have a lot to do with the fact that it's one.
For sure.
Because Harvey Weinstein was all over the place, all over that time. So that sucks.
Gross.
Let's see. Correct. I adore him. Oh, the archbishops have always been little bitches. That's what I wrote.
You know what?
You can't come in here. This is only for the Jeffrey Rush is like, I'm here to help him. I'm just here to help. I'm not trying to cause a ruckus. You can't be in here. This is only for important people. Anyways,
I'm important to him.
They're always curmudgeons, all of them. this winning is considered like an Oscar travesty, and I feel like that's dramatic. I don't think it's a travesty. It's disappointing. I think
it's disappointing for sure. For sure.
So this score that I really enjoyed was Alexander Desplat, who also did Little Women, The Shape of Water, Imitation Game, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Philomena, which I mentioned earlier, Zero Dark Thirty, Argo, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, and The Tree of Life.
He's got some bangers.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Dude's good.
Yeah.
And then I wrote Danny Cohen. Who is that? What did Danny Cohen?
He was the cinematographer.
Okay, well, he also did Room and Les Mis, obviously.
Mm.
So, yeah, just a little. Catch those episodes if you want. Yeah, any last notes, anyone?
No, I think we got everything, right?
Willy shit and fuck and tits.
That helps me decompress, yes.
I mean, yeah,
it does. Okay, so let's go through some categories. It's nominated for Best Picture. Obviously, it won. How do we feel about it being here?
Boo.
It could be there. That's fine. But I don't think it should have won, obviously.
Agreed.
I agree. I guess we'll do our rankings at the end, so we'll say what we think.
Oh, fuck.
start thinking about it, Joy.
That's your line, Joy.
Performance by an actor in a leading role, Colin Firth won, against Javier Bardem for Beautiful, Jeff Bridges for True Grit, Jesse Eisenberg for The Social Network, and James Franco for 127 Hours.
I see why he won. Because, you know, the triumph, he did it, you know, attaboy situation. I feel like I've seen Colin Firth be a better actor before. I kind of would, I don't know who I would give it to.
See, I haven't seen Javier Bardem's in Beautiful, but
he was great.
Of the four I had seen, I still think I'd pick Colin Firth.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, because I don't. James Franco was fine, but not enough to win. And Jesse Eisenberg, I don't. That one's hard to judge for me because I feel like I'm so in that. But maybe, yeah, I guess Colin Firth, I would have to agree. I'm okay with him winning.
Also, a little bit of bias for me when it comes to Jesse Eisenberg. I just don't like the guy.
That's fair.
My thing with Jesse Eisenberg and this role in particular, I feel like it's too close to his actual personality, which I know has been a criticism in some of the acting categories that we've had in the last couple of years. So it's really hard to separate the like art from the artist because it's too, there's so much overlap. But I think other than Colin Firth, I don't know. I don't feel like any of these five in particular are too like, I don't think there's really one that really outshines the other.
Nothing screams best actor.
Right. I think I would put James Franco last. But I think that the other four are pretty evenly keeled. I don't think there's any one that's like, wow, that's the one. Or two that I would be like, wow, if it was one of these two, then I'd be okay. I'm not upset that Colin Firth won that, but I'm not like, I don't know. This doesn't feel like a super exciting category this year. I feel like it was very, yeah. And like I've seen almost all of Beautiful with Javier Bardem, and he's really great in it. But I think it's probably up there with Jeff Bridges and Colin Firth.
Yeah, I'm with you. That. I'm okay that he won. I'm okay with this. If it can't be Tom Hanks for Toy Story 3, then I'm fine with Colin Firth for The King's Speech.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think of who else would have been in this category instead. And I'm like, there's not a lot of things that are popping out to me. No.
I guess they could have, if they wanted to be like diplomatic about it, they could have given, oh, but I guess, because Social Network won adapted screenplay, but they could have given it to Jesse Eisenberg, so it could have won like more, but.
Most, yeah.
But I don't know. They were too scared. The Social Network was too modern for them to award that movie, probably. So,
yeah, at the time.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
That's fine.
Performance by an actor in a supporting role. Christian Bale won for The Fighter. He was nominated against John Hawkes for Winter's Bone, Jeremy Renner for The Town, Mark Ruffalo for The Kids Are All Right, and Jeffrey Rush for The King's Speech.
I think Jeffrey Rush should have won this.
I agree.
Jeffrey Rush?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I still haven't seen The Town, but
he's really good in that movie. But I think if I'm talking about what we've seen, Jeffrey Rush, honestly. He was really good at showing how much, like, a realistic amount of emotion that a man in that time could, like, outwardly. I think it helped that he was a performer. He was an actor. And that scene where he's, like, auditioning, they're kind of like, oh, we don't really have anything for you. Sorry, you're too old to play this role, but too young for this role. And he's just kind of like, okay, like, his face. And then you can see his expressions, whatever Colin Firth is giving his monologue about the nurse and stuff. And I think he's a really good actor to bounce off of. And those scenes were really, really, they did a good job of showcasing that, for sure.
I think he does, like, fit the, he is a supporting role in this. Like, he is, like, supporting the actors around him, supporting Colin Firth's performance. So of the nominees, yeah, I'd probably go with that. But I really think, where is Andrew Garfield? Where is Andrew Garfield? And why is he not on this list?
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Just rude. I would have at least put him in here. I wouldn't have picked him to win necessarily, but I think he should have been
a nomination
in here. He should have been nominated for sure.
I really enjoyed The Town. And I know how people don't like Jeremy Renner a lot, and that's okay. I haven't seen it since it came out, so I don't remember the most. And only because King's Speech is fresher in my brain, I'd go with Jeffrey Rush, but The Town was a really good movie. And Jeremy Renner was good in it. Next category.
Forgot I was muted. Took me a minute to get my... Anyway, performance by an actress in a supporting role. We have Melissa Leo won for The Fighter. She was nominated with Amy Adams for The Fighter, Helena Bonham Carter for The King's Speech, Haley Steinfeld for True Grit, and Jackie Weaver for Animal Kingdom. My pick is Haley Steinfeld.
Same. I think, much like what Joy said about Jeffrey Rush being an actual supporter actor, same with her. She was literally supporting both Jeffrey Rush and Colin Firth very, very well. They utilized her well. I kind of liked her, yes, I'm the queen, but she wasn't arrogant about it. You know, she's very sweet and caring. But yeah, this was Haley's for sure. Without question.
Yeah. Achievement in directing. It went to Tom Hooper for The King's Speech. He was nominated against Darren Aronofsky for Black Swan, David O. Russell for The Fighter, David Fincher for The Social Network, and Joel and Ethan Coen for True Grit.
David Fincher. I mean, we can all agree on that, right?
Fincher or Aronofsky?
Yeah.
But yeah. Fincher.
I think.
But, yeah.
I mean, come on now. And David O. Russell, get out of here and put Christopher Nolan there for Inception. What the fuck?
How did he get, he keeps getting snubbed. It's poor guy.
He's trying so hard. Great
work. He really is. He really is. And I'll appreciate him for that. But come on. It was nominated for Best Picture. It was nominated for tons of other stuff. How did you not put him in here?
Also, because you can't come. You mean to tell me The Fighter is better directed than Inception?
Absolutely.
Are you stupid? I don't think he should have won. I disagree. Him being there, I guess. But David Fincher all the way.
It's I mean, I'll make a case for Darren Aronofsky that whole thing was orchestrated so, so well, and those things were put together. The different levels of skill in the cinematography, the score, the acting, all the things that he orchestrated really well. But the same thing, I mean, The Social Network too. And really Inception was put together really well, because I think those three movies have such a clear vision of what they want to execute. And the directors, you know, you can see their hand in everything. There's no way they should have won directing. There's no way.
No.
This is as basic can get.
Well, maybe not basic, because the style is off-center and super close-up. It's not the best style, but it's a style. It's better than The Fighter. What did The Fighter have? Literally nothing.
Yeah, I just feel it's so mid. It's so average. It's so if you're a good director, yes, this is what you should produce. If you're an amazing director, if you're a visionary director, then you would produce Black Swan, The Social Network, and Inception.
Visionary, there it is. Yeah.
Or even True Grit, for that fact, you know? Literally ever.
Yeah, I think True Grit would have been so boring and mid had it been directed by anybody lesser, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But it had character. Agree. It was interesting.
Yeah.
Ugh. Original screenplay, The King's Speech won by David Siedler. It was nominated against Another Year, Mike Lee, The Fighter, Scott Silver, Paul Tamasi, and Eric Johnson. With the story by Keith Dorrington, Paul Tamasi, and Eric Johnson. Inception by Christopher Nolan, and The Kids Are All Right by Lisa Cholodenko and Stuart Bloomberg. My pick is Inception.
It should have been original. Same. It should have been Inception.
The most original.
The it most original. And different and fun. It was, I think, the clear winner here.
I think this year proves that the Academy hates him, because of everything he's done, Inception probably was the most original.
Yeah.
And what?
Right. And it was, I think that, this one, along with, we keep bringing up Interstellar, maybe this one a little bit more, have the best balance of technical achievement with emotional weight. You understand the technicality of it, the levels of dream, whatever, the science, the architecture, whatever, but you also get an emotional hit from it. So it's so well balanced, and it didn't feel like it was going on for a million years. The timing was right. It was paced very well. Like the dialogue wasn't, you know, awkward and weird. It was just like it flowed very, very well. It did what it was supposed to do. And it's called original for a reason. Like,
yeah.
Again, I'm not saying it's basic, but The King's Speech is very average. And I feel like a lot of competent writers could write their King's Speech, but not everybody could write Inception.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. Also, like, I feel, because you can clearly feel Nolan really gunning for an Oscar because he's done the war pick. He just did Oppie's the biopic. So he's like, what's it going to take? What do I got to do?
Right.
Art direction, Alice in Wonderland 1 by Robert, with production design by Robert Stromberg and set decoration by Karen O'Hara. It was nominated against Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, with production design by Stuart Craig and set decoration by Stephanie McMillan. Inception, with production design by Guy Hendricks Dias and set decoration by Larry Dias and Doug Mowat. Those are some names, man. The King's Speech, with production design by Eve Stewart and set deck by Judy Farr. True Grit, with production design by Jess Gontor and set deck by Nancy Hay. I don't know what my pick would be here.
My pick would be The King's Speech because I loved how lived in it felt. It felt real. Alice in Wonderland and Inception were good, but they felt fake. They felt like a CGI
contrived
fest.
Yeah,
this in True Grit felt real, and it was like they actually used actual fabric, actual painting on the wall. I don't know if they did, I didn't look it up, but it felt real and lived in. And I think this would have been King's Speech maybe its only win. I feel but yeah, I think it should have been a King's Speech.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards. I mean, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, I kind of mentioned this last year when Part 2 was nominated, that this was like the first, they didn't go back to Hogwarts. It wasn't the same old.
It was fresh.
It was fresh. There was a lot of different places they went to. And it was great. I think all the places were really well done. True Grit was more nature-based. So there's, yeah, you know, not a lot of constructed sets, I would assume. So I'm between Harry Potter and The King's Speech, but I'm leaning towards King's Speech, mostly for his office.
And then the design of the palace. I want that wall. Yeah. And then
it's literally that fucking wall.
His podcast room was beautiful. Because yeah. I think with True Grit, they were probably crediting like the fact that they built actual towns for them to like walk around.
Sure.
Yeah. But to me, I like, and because it's royal, the refinery? How refined and regal it was. I meant regal, my bad. The regalness of everything in that. Even like the butlers have like these really beautiful capes that are like, well, that's costumes, but just the fireplaces, the look of the fireplace. Oh, no. Yeah. King's, for me, this is the winner, King's Speech.
That's why I want to know what I guess like what percentage of it was already a real place and what of it was constructed for this or maybe like altered for this.
Yeah.
I think my one thing that Inception has over this is that most of them were like constructed sets and they had to like,
that's true,
really design and basically be architects and making all those things work together. I would go with Inception or The King's Speech. I would go with either or.
And they're both so different when it comes to art direction. So
yeah.
That's what makes it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what I think overall in the Oscars, that's kind of what it ends up being, is that you're just like your taste.
Yeah.
Some people have a taste for this and some years it leans more this way or that way or whatever. But I mean, I think they're both very good.
Yeah.
I agree. Achievement in cinematography. Wally Pfister won for Inception. He was nominated against Matthew Libatique for Black Swan, Danny Cohen for The King's Speech, Jeff Cronenweth for The Social Network, and Roger Deakins for True Grit.
I mean, what a category.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I mean, King's Speech, it's good.
It's fine.
It doesn't need to win. But I mean, Inception, Black Swan, The Social Network, even True Grit, like.
Yeah. It's banger after banger after banger. Like, four of these are kind of like almost flawless. Three of these are actually flawless.
Comparing this category to last year's category.
Yes. Oh my God. Not even close. This was such a good year for cinematography.
That's why the next year was so off, because everyone was recovering from making this year's movies. They were like, there wasn't enough turnaround for their next one.
Right.
Yeah. That's fine.
Oh my God. Yeah, you can't even compare. I'm torn between Inception and Black Swan. True Grit, Roger Deakins, I love you. It's very good work, but I feel like your best work is, what did we watch? Sicario,
oh my
I think.
God, Sicario.
But he's great in this too. The Social Network, it was good, and it was a modern, naturalistic take. Great, good job. But I think that what Wally Pfister did with Inception and what Matthew Libatique did with Black Swan is just fucking phenomenal. And Matthew Libatique did it again with A Star Is Born, but like in Black Swan, it was so much more like, I don't know, I feel like that was even more like technical and critical of like timing and everything. And then just Inception is Inception, and he literally engineered new images. So I'm okay with his win.
Yeah, I feel like that was its Inception's to lose, honestly. Like once you saw, you're like, oh yeah, this is cinematography, like obviously, clearly. But yeah, those others, they I mean, I'm not mad about King's Speech being in here, I don't think, but still, I just like, ugh, so good. All of them are so good.
Yeah. It's hard to pick just one, but I think I lean more towards Black Swan. Only a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's no wrong answer, really.
Yeah, no. You have four very correct answers and one still kind of correct answer. So I just, it's so strong that I could sit here and post a thousand screenshots of like every movie, and it's still flawless, banger after right. banger after banger after banger. Like the transitions into shots, and just, I just keep thinking about like Black Swan and that last one where it's like spinning around her while she's moving, and like,
yeah,
how you have to like choreograph the camera and the actors and like all the other, like the extras and like the lighting, and like, oh my God, it's just, it's insane. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just so good. You know what? I'm gonna go rewatch Black Swan and Inception. It's so good. What a good year. What a good year this is.
What a good year for sure. Achievement in costume design. We have Colleen Atwood won for Alice in Wonderland. She was nominated against Antonella Canarozzi for I Am Love. Jenny Beavan for The King's Speech, Sandy Powell for The Tempest, and Mary Zofris for True Grit.
I enjoyed the costumes. It's fine if it's here. I think Alice in Wonderland, just because it was so, like, you know.
Much.
So much. Yeah. I really think Black Swan should be in this category, because the look of the costumes in Swan Lake were phenomenal. Same with makeup. But, I don't know. I don't really have a thought for this category.
I don't either. I don't have a horse in this race.
I think, I don't know. I think kind of Alice in Wonderland might be the safe choice for this, because I think True Grit, it's really hard to get garments to look lived in and to look like worn and torn and like westerny and like full of dirt and shit. So I don't know. I think I would prefer True Grit. But I know obviously there was a lot of work going into Alice in Wonderland.
I wouldn't be mad if True Grit won. Achievement in film editing.
Angus Wall and Kirk Baxter won for The Social Network. They were nominated against Andrew Weisblum for Black Swan, Pamela Martin for The Fighter, Tariq Anwar for The King's Speech, and John Harris for 127 Hours.
I mean, this is between Social Network and Black Swan, honestly, I think.
100%. Yeah.
King's Speech, fine. The Fighter, why? 127 Hours, I can understand. Especially because he was in, they had to find a way to make it compelling, him being in that one spot and then telling the story. But the fact that you never really knew what Nina was seeing and editing in that, and then The Social Network, how that was like, they were able to weave the two, the depositions plus the story, telling of a story, and it feel cohesive. I mean, that's tough. Those two are, but I'm okay with Social Network winning, but I would have been okay with Black Swan too.
I feel the exact same, except I won't disparage The Fighter too much, because we love to see a woman in the category.
Oh my God, that's true. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. She can stay there then.
The Fighter, fuck you. Pamela Martin, good job.
Good job, ma'am.
But yeah, I feel the exact same. I think Black Swan and The Social Network were teeth and tooth.
We're starting saying that now.
Tooth and tooth. Yeah, they were both really excellent. Next, we have Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures, aka Original Score. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross won for The Social Network. They were against John Powell for How to Train Your Dragon, Hans Zimmer for Inception, Alexander Desplat for The King's Speech, and A.R. Rahman for 127 Hours.
The Social Network is my favorite score ever, so obviously you know my answer. I'm okay with King's Speech being here because I like Alexander Desplat. But I would have been okay with True Grit by Carter Burrell also being here. But Social Network. All day.
That score
like changed my brain. Like when I think of monumental scores in my life, that is one of them. So that's really hard for me to answer that question like and be diplomatic about it. So
Regency bias.
I can't really. You know what?
I mean, I do have to say that the Inception score is so good, and it does add so much to the story.
Iconic.
It tells the story. It is iconic. Everyone knows time. Everyone knows it. It's just impossible.
Especially because this is their first one, and they were known for like rock music. And then they're like, oh, look, guess what I can do? Boom, a score. Like,
it's so good.
Crystal's mind is blown.
Yeah. Everybody go listen to The Social Network score for Crystal. Yes.
And finally, we have Achievement in Sound Mixing. Inception won with Laura Hirschberg, Gary A. Rizzo, and Ed Novick. They were up against The King's Speech with Paul Hamlin, Martin Jensen, and John Midgley. Salt, Jeffrey J. Habausch, Greg R. Russell, Scott Millen, and William Sorokin. The Social Network with Ren Kleiss, David Parker, Michael Semniak, and Mark Weingarten. True Grit, Skip Livesay, Craig Berkey, Greg Orloff, and Peter F. Kurland. I think sound mixing with Inception was really great. We had like all the kickbacks and the gunfire and crashes and
the waves.
It was all very seamless, and I really enjoyed the sound in that movie. I think it had the most sound.
The most sound,
actually, the most good sound, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
The King's Speech, I don't really know why it's here. Sure, whatever.
You know why it was here? It was for all the little, the mouth sounds. At one point, I was like, this is enough. I can't listen to someone's mouth this close so much. Because it was so, like, crisp every time that you would hear, like, not like spit, but just, you know, like mouth sounds. And it's kind of like when someone's like chewing in your ear, sometimes it's a little much.
I honestly would have taken the King's Speech out and put Black Swan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because
it was a better use of sound too.
Those noises,
the rustling of the feathers. Yeah.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yeah.
So great.
I mean, so much to me, it's so much better. I would have swapped it out, but because King's Speech was a fine movie, but it had way too many nominations, honestly.
Yeah,
way too many. Is that the last one?
Yeah. That's it for categories. Next up is rankings. Final rankings.
This is it.
Okay. I'll go first. We'll go in alphabetical order.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, this was hard. At the very bottom, I have The Fighter. Number 9, I have Winter's Bone. 8, I have 127 Hours. 7, I have Kids Are All Right. 6, I have The King's Speech. 5, The Social Network. 4, True Grit. 3, Inception. 2, Black Swan. And 1, Toy Story 3. Now, 4, 5, and 6, True Grit, Social Network, King's Speech. They could go in any order.
I'm surprised True Grit is that high, honestly. I know you said they could swap. I'm very surprised.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you did.
I really enjoyed it. And I think I think it just took me by surprise. I was not expecting to like it at all. And the fact that I really enjoyed it, I think that's what's staying with me more than the movie itself. But yeah, 4, 5, and 6 can kind of be mixed around, and I wouldn't be mad about where they land. But yeah, that was hard for me. I really struggled with this ranking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, neat. So, number 10, The Fighter. Number 9, The Kids Are All Right. Number 8, Winter's Bone. Number 7, 127 Hours. Number 6, True Grit. Number 5, this is where I have The King's Speech. 4 is Inception. 3 is Black Swan. 2, Social Network, and 1, Toy Story 3. But top three could change, and I'd be okay with it. Because those top three are solid to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
Wow. Wow. We're so different this year. I love it. Okay, so at number, what is this, 9? 10?
10.
10. 10. Okay. At number 10, I have The Fighter. That's the only one that we have all in common, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because we're all correct on that. Number 9, I have 127 Hours. Number 8, The Kids Are All Right. Number 7, The King's Speech. Number 6, True Grit. Number 5, Winter's Bone. Number 4, Toy Story 3. Number 3, The Social Network. Number 2, Inception. And number 1 is Black Swan. I think 1 and 2 I could swap out, but only 1 and 2. And I think even then, I might still leave it as it is.
Honestly, because Black Swan was so scary, I would. That's why it's 3 for me. Just because I'm a big scaredy cat. Because like we said, it was dancing, Sebastian Stan, New York City. Like, I love all those things.
But I'm a big. But then they had to make it scary.
Yeah, and I'm a big chicken. So that's my only regret.
Chicken.
Oh my god.
Oh wow.
Yeah, guys, that's season 6. We did it. Another season of podcasting.
Oh my god. We're so like accomplished.
Very proud of us.
And you know what? Me too.
Also, we're recording this on December 22nd. This will come out on December 28th. And remember whenever I put all the original
dates together.
Release dates. Crystal was like, "Why are we releasing them so late? Why are we starting earlier?" This is why.
Yeah. Because life happens.
I had the foresight to know holidays will
suck. Well, my thought was just because Christmas is already so busy, and I knew I was going to have to be doing things. The idea of having to do that is just... Because,
well,
this episode took us how many weeks to record? Like, 3?
Yeah, the idea was that we would have been done before December.
Yeah, well, I mean, that stuff happens.
But that's why I was like, we're starting this late.
yeah.
Also, that was probably smart because that way we have leeway. Like, oh, we missed a week. Okay, we have some in the can right now. Because come Oscar season, we gotta be on it. So
gonna be some late nights.
We got a schedule to keep.
Yeah. Because we're probably gonna be recording 2 at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I might be like, I'm staying over because I'm not gonna get up that early because I'm too tired.
Come on over, baby.
So yeah, everybody, have a good. I guess you. Hope you had a good Christmas. Hope you have a good New Year.
Happy holidays. We'll be back before you know it.
Yeah, another season of this yapping.
Uh Oh my God. Current Oscar
conversations season. With Oscar is coming back.
Yeah. I would love to talk to him.
And then we'll take a little break.
You did.
I forget that sometimes because it was so amazing.
How do you? I would think about that all the time.
Well, because it was just so good. I'm blinded by it. I'm like, oh wow. It's like, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Wow. Our faces were next to each other. Big job day.
Did you touch his face?
No, I'm not going to invade his privacy like that.
No, I mean, like cheek to cheek. Like.
Oh, no. We were very close, though.
Okay.
Almost. Oh, God.
All right. Well, that does it for us here.
Yeah.
We can't wait to be back.
Yeah.
We miss you already.
I'm watching a lot of Oscar movies already.
Yes. I feel like I've
right,
seen
y'all.
I feel like I haven't seen enough, but we'll get there.
Same. It's never enough. There's always so many.
That's true.
That's a wrap on both 2011 and 2023.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Bye.